Hi, Dave Emery here. Side two, for the record, program number 776. The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook, Part 15, Updates and Further Analysis. This has been recorded on February 23rd of the year 2014. We're going to plunge right back in with an article and point of analysis that we were covering at the end of side one. This is from an article by the South China Morning Post, a McClatchy article. This is from the South China Morning Post of February 17th of 2014. It's headlined, Edward Snowden Revelations Prompt Crisis of Trust in Germany. And it deals with not only the loss of business and prospective loss of business by U.S. internet companies, but by German companies gaining business at the same time because of this. Note also that there is commentary here by a guy named Reinhold Aschott, who's the head of technology and innovation at ThyssenKrupp. ThyssenKrupp, a prime element of the Bormann Capital Network, inextricably linked with the Bush family and with major U.S. corporations. Again, arguably the single most important point element of the underground Reich, with evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of the Vatican Bank, the Habsburg family, and others. Note that Reinhold Aschott was previously a top executive with Siemens. And what he is talking about here are the implications of the Stuxnet worm. I would note that that worm, apparently developed by both Israel and the U.S. under the Bush administration, by the way, it attacks Siemens industrial control systems, which are used in the Iranian nuclear facilities. By the way, one of the leaks that prompted the Obama administration and Eric Holder to go looking for sources for these leaks was the leak to the New York Times of the actual authorship of the Stuxnet program. But again, about the Snowden PSYOP, and it is a PSYOP, it's a spook operation, and the information is intended as propaganda for public consumption, political effect, and consequences. This is an article, a McClatchy News Service story from the South China Morning Post of February 17th of 2014. Edward Snowden revelations prompt crisis of trust in Germany. And skipping down, the American dream of total cloud domination might be drifting away. There are signs of that happening. By 2016, U.S. companies are expected to lose between $21 and $35 billion in new contracts that they have been expected to collect, according to some estimates. German cloud companies are posting better than expected earnings. There have been signs that some U.S. tech companies might be suffering. Network equipment maker Cisco, for instance, noted government issues when it predicted a revenue drop for the current quarter. The new reality for some critics is that data that passes through the U.S. isn't safe. A year ago, a German cloud was regarded as a bad idea, says Daniel Castro, a senior analyst for the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation in Washington. German business didn't want a German product to help them in the global market. They wanted the best product. Today, even if businesses still believe a German cloud is a bad idea, they are accepting it as a necessary idea. There's even a new initiative, German Cloud, backed by a variety of German tech companies. The motto is, "My company data stays in Germany," unquote. Castro noted that this is a bad time for the American brand to lose luster. The market is growing rapidly. Castro wants hard evidence that confirms his earlier predictions that the international market share of U.S. cloud providers should fall by 5% this year and up to 20% by 2016 because of the spying allegations. The news could be even worse for American companies. The recent Interior Ministry panel showed just how fearful Germany has become. Reinhold Aschatz, last name, A-C-H-A-T-Z, spelled exactly the same, by the way, as Werner Aschatz, the Austrian-born lawyer, who for 11 years was Glenn Greenwald's partner and law partner, a romantic and sexual partner and law partner, this in the time period in which Greenwald was serving as a fellow traveler for various Nazi groups in the U.S., running legal interference for them, much of that work pro bono. Again, the sentence, the recent Interior Ministry panel showed just how fearful Germany has become. Ronald Aschatz, head of technology and innovation at the German steel giant ThyssenKrupp, noted that, quote, whoever can read data is also likely to be able to change data, unquote. For example, they could switch off a power station, he said. So from my point of view, it wouldn't be surprising if someone came up with the idea of switching off Germany. I'm serious about that, unquote. Skipping down. The NSA practically turned the Internet into a weapons system, Stoker says. That's Christian Stoker, the editor of Spiegel Online. If we want to change things, we have to enter into disarmament talks. Again, the notion of a no-spying agreement, a Five Eyes inclusion by Germany, is front and center. Now, again, note that Reinhold Aschatz, the top tech executive with ThyssenKrupp, is worried about shutting down a German power station. That probably is a reference to the Siemens control systems that were the target of the Stuxnet worm. Note that Reinhold Aschatz was previously a top tech executive with Siemens, which is inextricably linked with both German intelligence, the BND, and with the Bormann Capital Network, about which I speak so often, and which is the point element of, arguably the point element of the Bormann Capital Network. Again, I note in passing, I wonder if Werner Aschatz might be in any way related to Reinhold Aschatz. I certainly don't know. It's not a particularly uncommon last name, but again, food for thought and grounds for further research. I strongly suspect that Glenn Greenwald is far more than the journalist he represents himself as being. He's certainly a journalist. I strongly suspect that, like so many journalists, he is also a spook as well, perhaps BND or some other underground Reich-associated element. But again, it is my considered professional opinion that there is far more to Citizen Greenwald than what meets the eye. Note that ThyssenKrupp was seeking insurance against a cyber attack. This is from the Google News. It's an Agence France-Presse story from August 16th of the year 2012. This is titled, ThyssenKrupp Seeks Insurance Against Cybercrime Report. It reads in part, German industrial giant ThyssenKrupp is seeking to insure itself against possible attacks from computer worms that could sabotage production, the Financial Times Deutschland reported Thursday. Insurers are, however, reluctant to offer such policies, and only France's AXA has agreed to cover up to 30% of ThyssenKrupp's risks, the newspaper said. And again, noting ThyssenKrupp is the largest heavy industrial company in Europe, a point element of the Bormann Capital Network, strong historical links with the Bush family. And one of the things we looked at in For the Record 767, the destabilization of the NSA and the GCHQ, is that one of the American casualties of this PSYOP might very well be a cyber terrorism agreement in the U.S. Congress. At the same time, there are indications that Germany is upping its potential protection. Again, the Stuxnet worm targeted Siemens industrial control systems, and I suspect the leaking of the Stuxnet story has a lot to do with this particular intelligence operation. Albert Einstein, in discussing not only the invention of the atomic bomb, but nuclear power in general, noted that, quote, everything has changed but our way of thinking. And although it may shock the bejesus out of some people, I actually stand with the NSA on this issue, albeit a long way from unqualifiedly. in considerable measure because the same thing, in my opinion, applies to the weakification of society. I'm based here in the Silicon Valley, and I have some awfully good information sources. And one of the problems with the entire Snowden psyop in terms of the way it has been received by the public is a question of future shock. Everything has changed but our way of thinking. In effect, from tech sources, World War V is underway. The entire computer slash internet slash cyber warfare slash cyber snooping slash cyber terrorism, that is all completely, using a broadcast metaphor, the needles are pinned in the red. And even a lot of intelligence services and security experts and tech companies are really lost past the point. And one of the reasons that I use Albert Einstein's quote, everything has changed but our way of thinking, is that the weakification of society, the putting of everything on computer and the invention of the internet, has opened up the possibility of a single deranged individual, let alone, as well as obviously terrorist organizations with the capability to do so, to wreak untold havoc on the population. I would note in this regard, in For the Record 775, we took a look at a speculative element, what I termed a conspiracy theory within a conspiracy theory, that Adam Lanza, who had a deep preoccupation with pedophilia, also existed in an environment that was inhabited by serial pedophile priests who had been shielded by the Catholic Church. And I wondered about the possibility of Adam Lanza's massacre at the Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, in mid-December of 2012, and Pope Benedict's resignation 2 months later. One of the things that has not received that much publicity, too, is the fact that Adam Lanza was a computer whiz, a prodigy. From Newsweek of January 19th of 2014, an article by Matthew Lysiak, L-Y-S-I-A-K, called The Day the FBI Knocked on Adam Lanza's Door. It reads in part, in 2004, officials from the Federal Bureau of Investigation knocked on the door at 36 Yogananda Street in Newtown, Connecticut, wanting information on a 12-year-old boy named Adam Lanza, according to his mother. Adam had used his computer to hack through two levels of security on the government website, the officials told Nancy, and they wanted answers. And then she told them, skipping down, he's a computer whiz, she told the federal agents, assuring them he was just a very bright, if somewhat troubled, boy. Quote, Adam was just testing himself, unquote, she added. The thing that brings to mind, I wouldn't call what happened at the Sandy Hook Elementary School fortunate. The event spoke for itself. But if, for the sake of argument, Adam Lanza's psychopathology and consequent acting out of the same had taken a different route, suppose he had hacked his way. He was a computer whiz and was able to hack through two security firewalls to get to a government website at the age of 12. I don't think it is unreasonable to assume that his computer capabilities had grown with time. Suppose for the sake of argument he had decided to express his sociopathy and psychopathology by taking down a nuclear power plant or two or three. At some point, an individual or group of individuals may very well do that. In fact, cyber terrorism is sort of the order of the day for security experts. That's why, for all of the deep reservations, and I'll go into some of my own reservations that are very different, I think, they're from an intelligence standpoint about the NSA and its operations. I stand with the NSA, warts and all, on this one, because we are in a completely different age. And I think ultimately, as survivors wind up contemplating the ruins of our civilization, they will not only conclude that nuclear power per se, not just nuclear weapons, but nuclear power plants a bad idea, and they may also conclude that the weakification of society, which could lead to the taking down of something like that, or something else just awful, was also a bad idea. I suspect at that point it will be too late. I'm a long, long, long way from convinced that the NSA is up to the task at hand, but I'll tell you who isn't. The New York Times isn't up to it, and the ACLU isn't up to it, and Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea aren't up to it either. We'll see what happens. But again, as Einstein noted with regard to nuclear energy and the A-bomb, everything has changed but our way of thinking. That also applies to the weakification of society. Sadly, I think an awful lot of the Bill of Rights and the Constitution and the Fourth Amendment really are no longer applicable, in no small measure, because of the technological developments that have taken place over the centuries. And frankly, as I noted in For the Record 774, people have absolutely embraced the lack of privacy. And as I noted in that same program, people should be a lot more concerned. If they're worried about their privacy, they should be a lot more concerned about corporations and some of the apps that they have so enthusiastically embraced. Following from the Daily Caller of February 20th of 2014, it's by Giuseppe Macri, M-A-C-R-I. It's headlined, CrowdPilot App Lets Strangers Listen to Your Phone Calls. It reads in part, the NSA aren't the only ones capable of tapping phone calls anymore, thanks to a new smartphone app called CrowdPilot, which could potentially let anyone listen in on your calls without your knowledge. CrowdPilot lets you crowdsource your social interactions by bringing a group of your friends or strangers along to listen in and assist you in any situation, unquote, the app's description states. Whenever you need help, turn on CrowdPilot to stream your conversation to the web, where the anonymous crowd, optionally supported by a team of your Facebook friends, again, in your Facebook, the virtual panopticon, will tune in, follow along, and assist you. I mean, it's hard to read this without laughing. By the way, if my mirth seems distasteful, it comes from one of my favorite quotes by Friedrich Nietzsche, quote, a joke is the epigram on the death of a feeling. Beginning again, whenever you need help, turn on CrowdPilot to stream your conversation on the web with the anonymous crowd, optionally supported by a team of your Facebook friends, will tune in, follow along, and assist you, or become a CrowdPilot yourself and watch and direct others, unquote. That speaks for itself. CrowdPilot, continuing, lets any user bring a third party into a conversation without alerting the person on the other end of the line, the modern-day equivalent of picking up a landline while someone else is already on a call. Again, everything has changed but our way of thinking, and the various apps on people's smartphones could be compared to the cyber equivalent, the electronic telecommunications equivalent of a mosh pit at a punk rock concert. Updating something else, John Young, one of the original founders of WikiLeaks, and again, WikiLeaks and the Snowden operation are two different sides of the same operation. It now appears that WikiLeaks had not only got Snowden from Hong Kong over to Russia, again, two bastions of internet freedom, but they also appear to have shepherded him from Hawaii to Hong Kong in the first place. And again, WikiLeaks and the Snowden operation are part of the same operation. From CNET of July 20th of 2010, WikiLeaks' estranged co-founder becomes a critic by Declan McCullough, and of WikiLeaks and why he broke with them, John Young notes, they're acting like a cult. They're acting like a religion. They're acting like a government. They're acting like a bunch of spies. They're hiding their identity. They don't account for the money. And note the following. This is from a Rolling Stone article from December 1st of 2010. It's by Nathaniel Rich. It's called The American WikiLeaks Hacker, and it is about Jacob Applebaum. Like the other principals, most of the principals in the Snowden operation currently residing in Germany. And note the following about Jacob Applebaum. The article says, he is often driven to extreme measures to get copies of Tor through customs in foreign countries. I study what drug smugglers do, he says. I wanted to beat them at their own game. He shows me a nickel, then he slams it on the floor of his apartment. It pops open. Inside, there is a tiny 8-gigabyte micro SD memory card. It holds a copy of Tor. Quick, how many people do you know carry around a hollowed-out nickel with sophisticated electronics inside? As John Young noted, they're acting like a bunch of spies. In all probability, that's exactly what the hell they are. Now, I've talked about Citizen Greenwald and how this is a psyop intended, among other things, to damage, to destabilize the Obama administration and damage American diplomacy and foreign policy. I'm going to note a couple of things because we're low on time. This is a Reuters story from January 6th of 2014. Snowden has more U.S.-Israel secrets to expose. Greenwald. Former U.S. spy agency contractor Edward Snowden has more secrets to reveal that relate to Israel, the journalist who first brought his leaks to the world's attention said on Monday. And skipping down. Israel played down the disclosures, but Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said he had ordered the matter examined and that, quote, there are things that must not be done, unquote, between allies. Well, again, it's a pretty safe bet that Mossad and other Israeli intelligence services already knew about this. Again, NSA spying on Israel has been a matter of public record for a long time. What I would note here is that as John Kerry and Obama's State Department are working feverishly to try to negotiate an Israeli-Palestinian peace accord, the right-wing government of Benjamin Netanyahu is schmoozing with Glenn Greenwald through the media, and Benjamin Netanyahu as well is saying that he is shocked about this. Now, again, I want to note that Benjamin Netanyahu, first of all, there is a link to an article that I will have on, in the description to the show. Glenn Greenwald is no friend of Israel. Benjamin Netanyahu, with which he is schmoozing here, or with whom he is resonating, might be a better word, belongs to the Likud party, which is the heir to the fascist element within the Zionist movement. We're going to listen to a short segment of For the Record program number 94 from May of 1998. The excerpt is from the Searchlight magazine, a British anti-fascist magazine, from April of 1998.
There are a number of significant things about the recent Congress of the AN in Verona. I want to once again stress the similarity in the fascist rhetoric that the AN is adopting to the rhetoric of the Republican Party and the right wing in the United States. And I also want to stress that present at this Congress, again, the official Congress of the Italian Fascist Party in Verona, two of the people in attendance were U.S. member of the House of Representatives Bob Young of the Republican Party and Udi Cohen from Israel, a member of the Likud party in Israel, that in turn is the heir to the fascist element within the Zionist movement, about which we will have more to say in a minute. This particular article is entitled Likud Greets Feeney's Fascist Congress, and it concerns, among other things, U.S. Republican Representative Bob Young and Udi Cohen representing their respective parties at this fascist Congress. The article reads in part, it was the, quote, new, unquote, face of Italian fascism which dominated the official proceedings of the fascist Alleanza Nazionale's three-day assembly in Verona in February. More than 2,000 AN members and supporters attended, many personally invited and representing a cross-section of Italian business and industry. Gianfranco Fini, leader of the AN, was reportedly pleased with the results. Well to the fore in shaping both presentation and content was Domenico Fisichella, F-I-S-I-C-H-E-L-L-A, one of Fini's key strategists. His role in the AN has become increasingly prominent as his leader tries to replace the AN's black shirt image with a more respectable white-shirted one. Since the purge that took place at the AN's inaugural Congress at Fiuggi in January of 1995, Feeney has more than doubled the electoral support commanded by his party's successor, the openly fascist MSI. He's been able to mobilize up to 100,000 supporters onto the streets and is well on his way to establishing himself as the leader of the Italian right. Fisichella, a former Christian Democrat, has laid the basis for the AN's political respray by wrapping traditional fascism in terms such as the crisis of the Italian birth rate, unquote, the decline of patriotic values, unquote, decaying multi-ethnicity, unquote, and the crumbling Tower of Babel of pluriculture, unquote. And again, note the similarity between the rhetoric of the Italian Fascist Party and the Republican Party in the far right in the United States. Continuing, of that rhetoric, the article comments, these concepts are echoed by Feeney himself. He constantly refers to the dangers of one-worldism, unquote, by which he is referring to the supposed onslaught of immigration, unquote, from the Third World to Europe. Basing his arguments on the rising number of elderly people in Europe, coupled with falling birth rates among Europeans, Feeney appeals to fears that white, Catholic cultural values will be replaced by the alien values of a rising, non-white, immigrant population. The old racist propaganda, well packaged in bogus socio-cultural and economic jargon. It is armed with such ideas that Feeney wants to install the AN as Italy's biggest single political party. For his project to reach success, however, Feeney must fill two objectives. Having defeated and restrained internal opposition within the AN, he must neutralize his rivals on the fragmented Italian right, and he must win new allies abroad. The second aim shows sign of a breakthrough. Present in Verona were the U.S. Republican Congressman Bob Young, who compared Feeney's wisdom with that of former U.S. President Ronald Reagan, and Udi Cohen from the right-wing Likud party in Israel, who brought greetings from his party. By the way, again, note that Bob Young, a Republican member of the House of Representatives, was there unofficially representing the Republican Party of the United States, and Udi Cohen was there officially representing the Likud party from Israel, and he communicated his party's greetings. Skipping down, while Young and Cohen were praising Feeney in Verona, Alleanza Nazionale delegates outside the auditorium were signing petitions calling for the release of the Nazi war criminal Erich Priebke. The AN paper Il Secolo was calling the supporters of the SS-installed Salo Republic defenders of Italian honor, unquote.
That again from Searchlight from April of 1998, and that was from For the Record program number 94. I want to note that Netanyahu, of whose resonance politically and rhetorically Glenn Greenwald, himself an enemy of Israel, was courting, the right-wing government of Israel has continued to network with Eurofascists. I want to note that very recently this from YNetNews.com of July 4th of 2011 by Eldad Beck. Deputy Minister meets neo-Nazi millionaire. It's by, about Deputy Minister Ayub Kara meeting with Swedish-German millionaire Patrick Brinkman, who had ties with German neo-Nazi groups over the weekend. Another article from the Little Green Footballs spot of July 14th of 2011. The Unholy Alliance, how Israeli wingnuts befriended Russian Hitlerophiles. This by Sergei Romanov, and it is about, part of the right-wing Israeli coalition meeting with Russian fascists. I also want to note that Benjamin Netanyahu is a political ally of Mitt Romney, as is Ron Paul. New York Times, April 8th of 2012, a friendship nurtured in 1976 resonates in 2012. Again, the links, the titles, and the text for all of these stories that I have had to attenuate here due to the limitations of time are in the description for the Record Program 776. Again, Greenwald is an enemy of Israel. It makes no sense, or certainly no friend, for him to be schmoozing or resonating with Netanyahu. It does make a lot of sense if he wants to frustrate Kerry and Obama's State Department diplomatic offensive trying to arrange an Israeli-Palestinian peace accord, something that the Israeli right wing, to which the Israeli right wing is opposed. Well, that's all we have time for this week, boys and girls. Be sure to tune in for the next exciting episode of The Adventures of Eddie the Friendly Spook. Remember, boys and girls, Eddie isn't like those other spooks. They're scary and mean. Eddie is your friend. This concludes For the Record 776. The Adventures of Eddie the Spook, Part 15, updates and further analysis recorded on February 23rd of 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.